All right, it doesn't look like we have anybody else coming in, so we'll go ahead and get started. I'm Sarah Gardner, the Climate Action Coordinator for the City of Iowa City, and I'm joined today by our colleagues from the MPO, which is the Metropolitan Planning Organization. We have Sarah Walls and Emily Bothell with us, and then Diane Platt as well from the Climate Action Office. We, as you know, collaborated together with you, our volunteers, on the bicycle and pedestrian count, and we are so happy today to have a chance to share out with you some of the results and next steps. So I'm just going to take us briefly through what to expect today, and then we'll hand it over to Sarah to kind of break down the numbers. But just we're going to give you a little project recap for anyone who is joining the call who may not have been a volunteer. And then Sarah's going to take us through some of the key data points that were gathered, share some general observations that were noted down, and then we'll have time for discussion and questions because we are very interested to hear from you all live about some of the observations that you want to make sure rise to the top. And at the end, we'll talk just briefly about next steps for this project. Where do we go from here? So, Sarah, if you want to put us on the next slide. And say this number just blows me away. Thanks to the work of our 51 dedicated volunteers, we were able to gather nearly 15,000 data points, which is amazing, especially when you consider that was done in the space of one day and well above what we would have been able to accomplish on staff's team alone. So thank you to each and every one of you who participated in this event and helped us get such a rich set of data points to draw from as we think ahead to some projects in this area. Sarah is going to take it in the next slide and talk a little about what some of those data points broke down to be intersection by intersection, and then some observations from the data that we found were quite notable. And I won't, since that's really, I think, what you're all logging in to hear, I won't l make you listen to me any longer. I'll just turn it over to Sarah to take us away.
Hi, I'm Sarah Walls with the MPO in the City of Iowa City. And so just kind of to go backwards a little bit, when we did the training session, gosh, almost 2 months ago? No, well over a month ago, we talked a little bit about why we're counting now and that there are some major projects in the next 2 to 5 years that are really going to reshape things for bicyclists and other forms of active transportation. I talked a little bit about how every time we add an additional bike lane or a trail segment that we often have people ask us, well, are more people riding? And until we have that network sort of built out, it's, one facility alone is not going to make a huge difference. But we now have a basic network in place, although we all know that there's that big gap at the Iowa River and then getting, back and forth connecting between Melrose and Burlington Street, which is where most of the activity is. So in the next 2 to 5 years, the major projects that are coming are that Dodge Street reconstruction coming in 27 and 28. And they're paying a lot of attention to both pedestrian and bicycle activity along Dodge Street. Market and Jefferson in the next few years are planned to undergo a one-way to two-way conversion. So those streets would no longer be one-way streets, but two-way streets. That's a major project. Obviously, the Burlington Street Bridge replacement is going to be the project of a lifetime. And some of you have probably been involved with some of the planning processes for the new facilities that will greatly improve things for bicyclists, pedestrians, and transit riders. And then last but not least, over in University Heights, University Heights plans to extend the bike lanes on Melrose as far from their eastern city limits, which are about where the railroad tracks are, and all the way west to Sunset Street. We have some other facilities coming in further to the south, but those are kind of the major ones in the middle of the community, sort of the downtown campus area. And then also, I think it's worthwhile, and that's why we had you count micromobility, the changing nature of active transportation. I think probably some of you were surprised to see how many people are riding scooters, and I think most of us anticipate those numbers are only going to go up. And whatever level of closure is necessary for the recreation of or the reconstruction of the Burlington Street Bridge, Those scooters are going to be pretty handy to a lot of students. So I think a lot more students are going to be getting to and fro on scooters. So the count locations that we chose correspond with these major projects. And I should say that it's great that we did the count when we did, because we've been able to share that information with the various entities that are involved with planning these projects. So, although we didn't get the full counts on College and Dodge Street, the numbers that we did have, we have sh shared with the engineers for that Dodge Street reconstruction project. The numbers at Clinton and Market, Clinton and Market and Clinton Jefferson, those were shared with our engineers for that one-way to two-way conversion. Same thing, Burlington Street and then Melrose and Grand. That information was shared with the DOT and our consultant for planning for those facilities. So this was really handy, really helpful. So we're going to start off kind of sort of work from east to west. What we provided, what we're providing here is the peak hour count. And so we had, for most of these streets, it wasn't the case for Dodge and College, but we had 3 days of counts, AM and PM. So on this one, we only have an AM peak count, but we look at all those numbers and we kind of try to pick up, not kind of, we pick out the peak hour that the most activity is happening. And peak hour counts are something that we use in transportation planning. They affect signal timings, the kind of intersection control we have, just a whole variety of things that influence like how we plan for that intersection. So College Street is important. It's an even though it doesn't have a formal bicycle facility on it, it doesn't have bike lanes on it. It has a lot of activity, and as we look at that Market and Jefferson Street one-way to two-way conversion, College Street might take on more importance and might become something, may have a facility on it at some point. So you can look down and see that at that peak hour, which was the AM for this one, 7:45 to 8:44, that at the peak hour, 40 bicycles are going through that intersection. And then you can see the other activity. This was by far the lowest in terms of activity, but I did want to mention that. Then, oops, if we go to Jefferson and Clinton Street, so the AM peak hour, you can see that 50 bicycles are going through that intersection, this number down here. And again, that peak hour is 7:45 to 8:44. And then later in the day, the PM peak hour is 4 to 4:59. And these are gonna vary at different times of day. So during the peak hour, we have 50 to 60 bicycles going through AM, PM. And then you'll see like more than half that number is the micro mobility that's coming through. And then just a huge number of pedestrians during that peak hour. Market and Clinton Streets. Here, the AM peak hour is higher. Now, if you think about that with the one way, the direction of the street, it makes sense that in the morning a lot of people are traveling down Market Street to get to the university and downtown, and later in the afternoon more activity would be on Jefferson Street. But again, a decent level of bicycle usage, and then the micro mobility is about half that. And I do want to call attention, like, to these intersections. I think oftentimes when people think about Clinton Street, they think about just that downtown segment, but we have an awful lot of student housing to the north of Jefferson Street. And so I think as we get further with the bicycle network and considering micro mobility, that part of the corridor is going to become more important and get more attention. Then, sorry, I jumped all the way over to Melrose and Grand Avenue. And here you can see those peak hour counts in the morning, about 42 bikes per hour. during that peak hour are going through. Not so heavy with scooters as in the other area, and then in the PM 37. Again, not so heavy with pedestrians in this area that I would say this is probably more of more heavily reliant on motor vehicles and obviously CAN bus over in this area. But then here we are at Burlington and Madison, which is really the busiest segment. You can see again the peak hour in the morning, peak hour in the afternoon, 63 to 71 bikes per hour in those two peak hours. And then pretty heavy on the micro mobility in the PM peak hour. And that's from 4:45 to 5:44. And I'm just going to guess that that probably has to do with proximity to the CRWC. Don't know that for sure, but I would imagine that late in the afternoon, students are out of classes and they're headed over in that direction. And again, really heavy on pedestrian usage in that area. So that those are the data points. And what we do with them right now, we can't do a ton with them right now. We've, like I mentioned, we've handed those over to the engineers that are working on various facilities. But we'll come back later and revisit those again. But general observations, not all folks that counted were able to get the helmet usage and the riding look. There was a bit of a variety, but I think generally pretty low helmet usage, below 40%. There's not a helmet law in Iowa. We're not proposing one, but relatively low usage. Anecdotally, when I looked at the numbers, it looked like that was a bit higher at Melrose and Grand and Dodge and College Street. And the reason for that, again, just a hypothesis, is that I would guess that these are people passing through this intersection that are commuting further. And maybe it's with a further commute that you become more committed to having all of the equipment. I would imagine that a lot of those bicyclists that we saw at more of the downtown locations were coming from the dorms, just somebody hopping on a bike. Maybe they don't bike every day. Maybe they're not used to bicycling, but anyway, a bit higher usage at Melrose and Grand and Dodge and College, and that's purely anecdotal. And then scooter users, really low helmet usage, below 10%. Riding locations, again, this varied widely. Not everybody was able to get it, but or to capture this. But in some locations, about half of bikes are on the sidewalk. Now, I would imagine that throughout this area, bikes are hopping on and off. Bicyclists will ride while where they're most comfortable. So you might come down, and we'll talk about this in a little bit more in a second, but you might come down Madison Street in the bike lane and then hop onto the sidewalk to cross the Burlington Street Bridge, or you might be on the sidewalk at the CRWC and then hop off the sidewalk when you get further down. Scooter usage, sidewalk versus street, again, very widely. There was no sort of clear issue for that. Different times of day, different hours, behavior seemed widely different. And I just want to mention sort of where I was the most curious about, and a lot of you like provided some good notes, is this area, the Madison and Burlington Street intersection. And we know that people are hopping off at various areas. Not everybody is coming, is not everybody's relying on Market and Jefferson. A lot of people are relying on Washington Street, also Capitol Street. There's going to be various reasons for that. Obviously, Capitol Street is a really low volume street. So the comfort level for some bicyclists that are traveling north and south, if you think about it, they're scooting up north on Capitol Street and probably continuing along the Pennycrest, possibly. Museum Drive, Library Plaza, also a lot of experienced bicyclists, hop off Madison Street at that point and then connect over. And whether they hop into the bike lane on Burlington Street or use the bridge probably varies somewhat on time of day and just how comfortable that bicyclist is riding on Burlington Street. So, a great variation there. And the same goes with the scooter users. And so, as we move forward with planning facilities, especially the potential for protected facilities. I should mention that with the Burlington Street Bridge replacement, there it looks like right now the recommendation is a two-way protected facility on Burlington Street from Madison all the way across the river and then up Grand Avenue. That will be an improvement. Potentially, there will be a protected facility in the future on Madison Street. So, as we're thinking about that, I think one of the big challenges will be how we make the different modes comfortable with where they ideally should be on the street. And obviously, I'm thinking mostly of bikes and micro mobility, the e-scooter users. How do we get those people not only comfortable using a bike lane, but also understand the etiquette and how to use a bike lane? As I've mentioned to some people, micromobility is this form, the e-scooters, that we don't have a way to reach those people. There's not a culture of scooter use. And so you probably observed they're all over the place. Not necessarily in the safest fashion, but we don't, our kids don't learn scooter usage in school. They probably don't even learn it from their parents because these tend to be devices that kids don't pick up. I should say, not even kids, young adults don't pick up until they're in their late teens or early adulthood. And then it's not something that's a social thing. So we don't have scooter clubs. We don't have scooter teams. We don't have organized scooter rides. So educating those folks is going to be a challenge. So I just wanted to share kind of my thoughts in this area and kind of the challenges that we as transportation planners will face. And I think those things were observed by the folks that counted in this area.
Sarah, can I pop in for a second? We had a
Sure.
question come in the Q&A about what is meant by the term protected facility. Could you take us through that
Yeah.
just a little?
So a protected facility. So one of the things, kind of at the lowest level, the city council has encouraged us or has set as a strategic goal to have what's called a bollard protected bike lane. So bollards would be those narrow tubes that you might see. We don't have any locally, but they're intermittently installed just kind of as a level of protection along generally a buffered bike lane. So they'd be within that buffer to discourage motorists from moving across into the bike lane. At a higher level, that might be a physical structure that prevents you. So that could be anything from a curb stop to an actual built up concrete facility so that you're kind of in your you're separated by a something that's pretty hard for a motorist to enter, to cross over. And then a third example would be like a cycle track where you're on your own facility. It might be adjacent to the sidewalk, but it's separate from the sidewalk and it's separate from the road, but it's above the grade of the road. And so those are things that the permanent facility is something that's going to be part, it looks like that's going to be part of the recommendation for the Burlington Street Bridge replacement. And that would run from Madison Street, to Riverside Drive. Then there would be some special facility to get you across Riverside Drive, special markings, signalization, stuff like that. And then what happens to the west of there is still being discussed, but I think, bicyclists will be and micro mobility users will be in some fashion separated from motor vehicles and continue up through and over to Melrose. So that's what those facilities are. It's you are traveling right adjacent to the road, but there's something offering you that extra level of protection more than the paint itself.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah,
Now's
so
a oh, go ahead. I was going to say
so
now's a good moment to say if anybody else has any questions, feel free to pop them into the chat or the Q&A, and we'll be keeping an eye on them and reading them out at the end. Or we can unmute you if you'd like to request to ask your question live. So
Yeah, I think
please
it would
do.
be great. I think it would be great if we could unmute people, because I think, you know, what was a nice thing about this exercise that we all went through was you all got to do something that we do with some frequency here. So you were sitting down just observing what was happening, and probably noticed some things that you hadn't noticed before, or the degree to which you were aware of them changed. And so, as some people were returning their forms, they were telling us about their observations. And obviously, we're very interested in that kind of information too. Some of you wrote observations down on your counts, and those were useful. But anything that you want to share, we would be very interested in.
So I just unmuted Carol Jean. Carol Jean, if you'd like to speak.
Yes, I just have a couple of anecdotal comments. I know helmet use is not your focus, but I would have to say, from my observation point on college and Dodge, that I didn't see anyone over the age of 25 not wearing a helmet. It was all younger riders, and of those, I'm not sure there were many females. I think it was mostly young males who weren't wearing helmets. We also saw a near miss with an accident of people trying to cross Dodge who were on bikes. So I'm wondering, is there must be a plan for crosswalks or some kind of, like, there was no crosswalk, no signs or anything at that place, and I wonder if stripes or something would have at least made the drivers a little more aware.
Yes, we will be looking at that with Dodge Street. That is a difficult intersection because of the one-way traffic. So you have two lanes going in the same direction, and you have the signalization at the next block, and that's where the one-way ends, and south of Burlington Street, it becomes two-way. So there's a lot for motorists to be paying attention to at that intersection. So, and Emily can chime in if she wants to, but signage doesn't always have the intended effect. And one of the things that we struggle with a little bit here is I was first of all, any intersection, when you come to the end of the sidewalk at an intersection, it is a crosswalk, whether it's marked or unmarked. Definitely cars pay. Typically, motorists would pay more attention, you know, where there's more signage, depending on how much signage you have. And this is an area that's, if you go down there, it's heavily signed between, well, really between Washington and Burlington. And so Iowa's crosswalk law is that motorists must yield by slowing or stopping to bicyclists or pedestrians who are in the street that's in the process of crossing. And I think there's an expectation that if there is crosswalk signage, that it means that motorists have to stop and allow you to cross, and that's not the law. And in a location like this, where we have two lanes going in the same direction, that can create what we call a multiple threat situation, where one car stops and the other doesn't, and the motorist and the pedestrian or bicyclist don't see each other in the next lane. So that is an area that we struggle with, but we are looking at it again with the Dodge Street reconstruction. Emily, do you have anything to add to that?
I don't know.
I would say that I've done some observations at this intersection, and I do think that the presence of bicyclists on College Street is a benefit to everybody. I think they tend to slow traffic, especially as on this portion of College, but then also motorists coming forward, a bicyclist is just so much more noticeable than a pedestrian. But I don't doubt that there are sometimes it's a busy intersection. So I know that's not a perfect answer for your question, but it's something that we struggle with because anything that we install has multiple, has the potential for different effects than we're hoping for.
Thank you. That's a good point about it being a double one way because we've had fatalities in other parts of the city.
Yep. We
Yeah,
have. And
interesting.
I think
Interesting.
unfortunately, motorists, the other thing that I've observed at that intersection is because of the signal a block ahead, motorists are kind of watching for where they are in the light. And so you'll notice at certain times, they'll kind of crest that hill down at Washington. Depending what the light is, they'll either slow down or speed up. And so it's an unfortunate, so that just presents a lot of challenges. I think a lot of motorists are just so determined to hit that green light while they're still rolling. For sure. Are there
Do we
other?
have any other questions? We're keeping an eye on the chat and the, let's see. Sarah, we've had a request to repeat the Iowa law that governs whether motorists must yield to pedestrians where there are pedestrian signs. There's some confusion about
There
that,
is no there,
understandably so.
yeah. There is no law specific to where there are signs. There is no such law. The law is not different where there are signs. At any crosswalk, which is where, I'm on the sidewalk and I'm about to cross the street at an intersection. There's a sidewalk on the other side. That's a crosswalk, whether it's marked or unmarked, signs, paint, or no signs or paint. The other place where there's a crosswalk is at a mid-block location. You can cross, it's considered a crosswalk if it's marked. You can't just willy-nilly cross mid-block. So that's what a crosswalk is. Motorists in Iowa are required to yield by slowing or stopping to pedestrians or bicyclists that are in the process of crossing at one of those. That's either at an intersection. Now, bear in mind that if you're at a signalized intersection, everybody has to obey the signal. But if it's an unsignalized intersection, then what the pedestrian does is they look for an adequate gap to cross, and the motorist seeing somebody entering the street or even seeing someone approaching the street should be preparing to slow and if necessary stop. Now, I will tell you that and I know that's confusing, but I will tell you as a pedestrian and I walk almost everywhere, I'm always looking for that gap. I'm not looking down at my phone when I'm crossing, and I'm looking at the motorist to see what they're doing. I've occasionally had to hold up my hand. I'm probably a little bit more bold than the average pedestrian. When I am driving and I see somebody approaching a crossing, I'll kind of slow down. Rather than pulling all the way up and then stopping, I'll slow down kind of to signal them, you've got the gap, go ahead and cross. I'm guessing that's not how most motorists behave, but they do once you are once you are in the roadway, they must yield to you, but you also have to, because you are the vulnerable road user, you have to judge that gap so that they have a opportunity to see you. And I think for your own safety, you also have to judge, is that car coming flying over the speed limit, or does that look like a motorist who's paying attention? And I wish it were easier than that, but it's by law, it's not.
And I wanted to take that one step further. If a pedestrian or bicyclist is at the curb and you're waiting and you have not yet stepped into the roadway, a motor vehicle by law is not required to yield by slowing or stopping to you. So it's just the flip side.
And as we were talking about before, that multiple threat situation, yes, we had a fatality a couple years ago in Iowa City where one motorist stopped and the other and waved the pedestrian across, and that pedestrian didn't look and the motorist didn't see them, and we had a fatality that way. We've also had collisions where someone is stopped or stopped and wave someone across, and it's this unfortunate thing where, depending on the experience of the pedestrians, people will enter the roadway without looking. So we've had a few collisions where people have been waved, and then the motorist coming from the other direction, or coming along, this, doesn't see them. So it's I wish there were an easier, more straightforward, but it's kind of a dance, and both motorists and pedestrians have to be paying attention. But I'm going to say, but the onus is always going to be on the pedestrian, because you're the vulnerable road user. So the motorist is going to get a ticket if they strike you, but you're going to suffer the real consequences.
So Barbara J has her hand up, and then it looks like we'll circle back to Carol Jean, who has another
Yep,
question.
sure.
All right, Barbara J, you're unmuted. Oh, you may have to unmute yourself as well, Barbara J, in order to be able to speak. I don't think we can quite hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep,
Yep,
we
you guys.
can. Thank you.
Hi. Downtown Iowa City, when I'm riding my bike there, I know that I've heard that law enforcement's wanting to crack down on the individuals who are riding bikes on the sidewalks and the scooters. Oh my gosh, they go fast, and no helmet on the sidewalks. I think Washington Street, I would say, is the worst for riding a bike. It's real tight there with the cars parked on both sides, and then I have to do a go around my bike to get to the intersection, just to go back across on the south side if I'm on the north to go to Target, the store Target, and it's real scary down there. I know that there's, I don't recall the parameter of where, which streets from end to end, excuse me, from end to end that are ones that we're not supposed to ride anything with wheels on a bike. Anyway, anything you guys know anything about any kind of plans in the future for that area? Probably not, but I just thought I'd just throw that out there.
I think within the downtown, I'm trying to remember. I think the I don't have the code open in front of me, but it's Capitol Street to the west, Burlington Street to the south, Gilbert Street to the east, and Jefferson or Market. I think it might be Jefferson to the north. You cannot be on the sidewalk on a wheeled device. I will say, for bicyclists, that the speeds in the downtown are lower simply because of the amount of congestion, the amount of pedestrian activity. There's traffic control at every intersection. Somebody is stopped, or you have a signal at every intersection. And I think on Washington Street, again, this is just observation, the speeds are pretty low. I would recommend as a bicyclist that you take the lane when you're riding through that area, especially I would say from Clinton to at least to Gilbert Street. Be out in the middle of the lane. That way you're not, at risk of a motorist dooring you who's parked. I think the motorist who is parked that's going to pull out has better opportunity to see you if you're out in the lane, and motorists are going through slow, so they'll wait behind you. I mean, yielding is, I would say, is pretty good at most of those crosswalks. I walk through the downtown several times, during the noon hour and late in the day, every week, and for the most part, the yielding is pretty good. I think drivers that now that would be different on Burlington Street, obviously, but I think drivers are, because they have to basically stop every block. So, and most of them are looking for a parking spot, so they're going slower anyway. So I think the downtown, the protection is in numbers. There's so much going on with people pulling in and out, with pedestrians walking, with bicyclists, that I think one of the good things down there is that I would say probably the highest compliance with people paying attention, and at least on the motor vehicle side, I can't say this is true for the pedestrian side, not looking at your cell phone, because that might be different for Grubhub folks, but the average driver, I mean, you just can't. You have to pay attention in the downtown. It's too much going on.
Am I still able
Yeah,
to
we
talk
can hear
or
you.
oh
Yeah.
okay. Well, there's that okay. I think I mean Washington Street, you know, where
Yep.
Target's at, the store. There's Harry's Bar and Grill across the street. That is really tight for a bicyclist. And like you get
But
to the
not if
stop.
you're in the but not if you're in the lane and you have the right
But
to.
there, I don't see a. I didn't know there was a lane there. It's a very narrow street because you got cars, angle parking on the north
Right.
side, and on the south side you got
Parallel.
parallel parking. And then you get to that stop sign, like you're going to go to the senior center, being that I'm a senior, and because like you're going, basically going eastbound, and you're getting to the stop sign, and yeah, that's a. It's a really bad area, and I have heard, I don't know how much this is will really happen, but law enforcement officers are gonna beginning to start, I'm not sure when or if, finding individuals who are riding with any kind of wheel device on the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And I wish they'd get those scooters that are just, oh my gosh, they go so fast and
Yeah.
no helmet. Yeah, anyway, that's all. That's all.
Yep.
So it looks next up we have Carol Jean and then Ulysses. Thank you for your patience. We'll get to you next.
Talking about a lot of about streets and civil engineering type of things, which maybe that's the focus of this conversation, but I'm curious to know what kind of education things do you have to encourage bike ridership? I'm thinking I know how to drive around in a car, but how and where to take my bike? Where do I lock it up? Is it going to be secure? Things like that. Do you have any kind of a, well, I'm sure you do have a program. What is the program for getting information out to encourage people to ride?
I would say that much of the education and encouragement on the city end, we have videos that we share. The Parks Department does some education, mostly for children. I would say the real source of education is the Iowa City Bike Library and Bike Iowa City, I think, share a lot of information. Bicycle parking in terms of at the in the downtown or when you're going to commercial areas or destinations like schools, that is provided by code, is required by the property owner or the business owner, depending on the situation. But we don't, the city doesn't do anything in terms of, yeah, I think other than the education that we provide through the bike shorts videos. I'm not aware of any other programming.
I think it's worth noting the city does provide financial support for the bike library to assist with that programming as
Yeah.
well. So, Ulysses, would you like to ask your question next?
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you said a very specific observation in, so I was doing Clinton and Jefferson.
Okay.
And I think one thing that was interesting, so I noticed that a lot of particularly bicycles that are traveling northbound on the bike lane, it's kind of a it's not a conflict intersection, but it they had different approaches of how they turn left when they wanna take Jefferson, because it's kind of there is no bike box there. So what they do, some of them, the ones that are comfortable are good taking the bike lane on the left, the car lane on the left, and turn left. There were a lot that stopped at the crosswalk and then walk or bike on the crosswalk when the green light come up. So I think it
Okay.
was one of those that I wanted just to highlight that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I don't think it's I didn't see any near miss or any potential conflict, just because, as Sarah mentioned, overall vehicles were traveling. They are really conscious that it's a very busy and there is a lot of pedestrians anyway. So, but yeah, there might be one of those that might be tricky and might require, yeah, more analysis when you do. especially you are transforming that to a two-way. The other quick comment is just, I don't know, the helmet discussion. I think I noticed the same trend. Older people using helmets, younger people not using. My personal take is helmet usage might not necessarily have to be the key element, because you can be using a helmet, but if you have a vehicle striking at 60 or 80 miles, helmet is not gonna do a lot. So I'm more on the of course you take that into your consideration, but yeah, I just wanted to highlight that there's
Yeah,
a lot of controversy about
yeah,
about.
the, I often hear that or read that in bike conversations. The thing that I would say is the people that I know who have been injured, either hit something in the road and were thrown off their bike, or, and I can say this, one bike crash I had, I was avoiding a pedestrian, and I had a friend in college who had the similar situation and hit her head and suffered permanent brain damage. So, you know, it's not always, I think we tend to th you know, we think, oh, the helmet is for the conflict with the car, but we're conflicting with other things. Not long ago, I was on a bike ride and almost hit a deer. So you just never know, you know.
I
And
think.
but I get it. People make their own choices and I
No,
understand.
and I think it's just most of the times it's just two different discussions. But I agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna be completely honest. I will never be riding my bike if I know I'm gonna do a bike ride of 2 or 3 miles. The other day I fell in a hole and nothing happened because I had the helmet. But you're right. Like, the other discussion is how we avoid victim blaming.
For
When there
sure.
is,
Oh, for sure.
a car, it's kind of two different conversations. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, I have noticed as well that particularly in downtown, it's just different comfort levels. Downtown does not have, not every street has a lot of infrastructure, particularly on bike lanes or protected bike lanes. But for the most part, when you are in downtown, people, like drivers, are really conscious about stopping and things like that. It's not the same in the high volume like Dodge and Gilbert, but yeah.
Right,
But
right.
yeah.
Yeah,
Anyways, thanks for that.
I think downtown probably is the one place where we can say drivers are being really careful. You know,
Yeah.
probably the highest compliance with everything is in the downtown. You just, yeah, which is not to say it's perfect, but you can't afford not to pay attention. Thank you
Thanks.
so much, though, for those observations. Those are, I've written those down.
Well, and the helmet conversation actually is a perfect segue to a question I had for the group of attendees today. When we were designing this data collection event, we had a pretty lengthy discussion about whether or not to include helmets among the observations, you know, whether or not that would be too much to pay attention to. And we ultimately included it, and we're so glad we did because I think we were all a little surprised by the numbers that came back. That was really useful data that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So I guess I have two questions for those of you listening in, and feel free to put your responses in the chat. The first question is just simply about the level of difficulty. Did you feel like the number of things we were asking you to look out for felt about right? Would you have preferred to just be counting pedestrians or just be counting bikes? Or did you feel like adding the helmets was too much for you? Or did it feel, or was it too little? That's also possible. Just any observations you have on how the ease or difficulty of collecting that data. And then if you wouldn't also mind in the chat, based on the things you observed, were there other things we could be collecting data on that weren't on the sheet that you think would be really valuable for us? Because, of course, you saw people going through, and as we were speaking to folks as they were bringing their clipboards back, there were all kinds of interesting observations jotted down. And, of course, we'll ask for that again in future events. But if there's some things you were seeing consistently over and over that you think this might be a good column to add to the sheet, let us know. That'll be really helpful for future events. And of course, if you prefer not to ch put it in the chat for any reason, if you want to raise your hand and share that vocally, I can always take you off mute to do so as well.
Thank you, Ulysses has his hand up.
Yeah, Ulysses, go ahead if you'd like to chime in.
Yeah, just very quickly. In my case, I think it depends on the volume of the street. Like, for example, Jefferson and Clinton was very busy with students walking. Like, a lot of students were coming off the bus in the north side stop. So I think splitting the counts there on only pedestrians and then only bikes and scooters would have been probably better, because in that sense, I think sometimes I know that I miss some helmet usage, or there was a lot of happening in terms of biking and scooters. For example, I remember that most of the scooters in that intersections were at some point using the crosswalk and the sidewalk, and for the most part, bikes were on the travel lane, in the bike lane, because there is bike lanes in there. But I wasn't able to actually count how many because I was focused also on the pedestrians. So, but I think overall, I think it depends on the volume, on how many things you can focus on. In this one, probably splitting up would have been better to be able to count other minor things like sidewalk versus not sidewalk, and helmet more accurately.
That's really helpful feedback. Thank you to you. And thanks to Frank and Carol Jean, who have put their comments in the Q&A. And our anonymous attendee. Sorry that chat's not working for you, but thanks for your observations as well. This is all very helpful feedback for us.
Yeah, I'll click on to the next thing. So, we hope we can repeat this in future years. I don't know if it'll be next year, but possibly. Obviously, we want to measure the change in bicycling and other active forms of transportation, especially the scooters, as time goes on. We also want to, as I mentioned at the beginning, getting those micro-mobility users kind of in the right spot and coaxing more bicyclists off the sidewalk into the on-street facility is something we want to do. So over time, counting and recounting will give us an idea of whether that's successful. And I just wanted to say, if you think of something later, an additional question or thought, you can feel free to send that to me. And I've put my email up there. And obviously, you know how to get a hold of Sarah. But I also want to say that thank you, thank you, thank you. This turned out to be very useful for us. But I also want to encourage you, as active transportation users, to take right now, for the entire metro area. So this includes Coralville, North Liberty, University Heights, Tiffin, and Iowa City. We are in the process of a Safe Streets and Roads for All survey. This is part of an a safety action plan that we're going to be working on for about the next 18 months, well, more like 12 months at this point. We have a survey. So if there are intersections, crosswalks, road segments where you think there's a safety issue, so this isn't the place to necessarily request a bike lane or something like that. But if there's somewhere along the roadway, whether it's on the sidewalk or in the street or on street facility, that you think there's a concern, if you go to mbojc.org and you look for this button, the Safety Action Plan button, it'll take you to the Safe Streets and Roads for All page, and you can scroll down and find the survey, or you can use this QR code that I've put up, and it will allow you to drop pins on the map, and then sort of just you'll that'll open up a bubble and you'll be able to answer some questions like what mode you're using. Maybe it's when you're driving, you're not seeing people, something's not happening, people aren't yielding or whatever. But if you put that information in there, and that extends beyond the boundaries of Iowa City, so but within, not in the rural areas, but within Iowa City, Coralville, North Liberty, Tiffin, and University Heights, this would be an opportunity for you to call attention to traffic safety issues that you see in specific locations.
Great. Well, it looks like we don't have any further comments, but thank you again for your wonderful aid in helping us collect all this data. Diane Platt has been recording all the things that have been coming in the Q&A, so we'll have a written record of that as well. And as Sarah mentioned, if you'd like to send further information or after you're digesting this information, you have other thoughts, please do feel free to reach out anytime. We're always happy to hear from members of the community and work together to make this a safe and vibrant place for people traveling in all modes. So, with that, we'll let you go back to the rest of your day. Thanks again, everyone.
Thank you.